I'm Jody, the mom.
And I'm Dr. Barr, the doc.
And this is Mom and Doc Talk, where we talk all things healing pans and pandas.
We bring together the mom experience and the doc expertise to give you the information and tools you need to help make the next right decision to get your child back.
Let's dive in.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back to Mom and Doc Talk. I hope you had a great summer and that you enjoyed. If you stuck with us for some of the replays of our favorite episodes or our most listened to, downloaded, whatever episodes, while we were taking a bit of a break from new content, then we're glad to have you still here. If you took a break along with the break we needed to take, welcome back. We decided to kick off this season with two members of our team, Dr. Gregory Pace and Dr. Ben Zarensky, because we had them on last season for an episode where we got a little geeky about homeopathy, and Jody loved it. A lot of our listeners loved it. Dr. Zarensky and Dr. Pace loved it. So we thought we would come back and just have a little bit more conversation about homeopathy to sort of set the stage for season three. And so we're going to talk about a couple of aphorisms or paragraphs from the Organon of Medicine. So I got my handy dandy book here for anybody who's watching on video. So we can talk about a couple that are really important for the concept of homeopathy and just like what we can expect and what homeopathy is ultimately trying to do. So welcome, guys. I'm really excited to have you back for this kickoff to season three.
Thank you. Good to be back.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I know we're going to talk about, for anybody who's already a homeopathy person, we're going to talk about aphorisms 3 and 9 today is really where we're going to start. So I'm going to read both of those to you. But before we do that, I thought we should start with the first aphorism of all, just for like to set the stage with homeopathy. So I'm going to just read it to you guys, if that's okay. So aphorism 1 from the Organon of Medicine. The physician's highest calling, his only calling, is to make sick people healthy, to heal, as it is termed. And there's a footnote to it. It's a little longer, but it's important. So it is not to weave so-called systems from fancy ideas and hypotheses about the inner nature of the vital processes and the origin of diseases in the invisible interior of the organism, on which so many fame-seeking physicians have wasted their powers and time. Nor does it consist of trying endlessly to explain disease phenomena and their proximate cause, which will always elude him. Nor does it consist of holding forth in unintelligible words or abstract and pompous expressions in an effort to appear learned so as to astonish the ignorant while the world in sickness cries in vain for help. Surely by now we have had enough of these pretentious fantasies called theoretical medicine, for which university chairs have even been established, and it is time for those calling themselves physicians to stop deceiving poor human beings by their talk and to start acting instead. That is, really helping and healing. So that's the first, that's how Samuel Hahnemann starts off the Organon of Medicine. Jody's ready to cheer here.
We can stop right there. I think that's, yeah, that sums it up.
Not done.
Well, so to give you guys just who are maybe new to like the philosophical texts and everything. So the Organon of Medicine is where Samuel Hahnemann lies out all of the principles of homeopathy, how to practice, his understanding for how things work, how to move forward with things. So the basis for classical Hahnemannian homeopathy is in this book. This is the 6th edition. He's had several editions because he does continue to like experiment because he's a scientist at heart. So he's always trying to work on improving everything. But this is something that was consistent from the beginning. Once Samuel Hahnemann understood the law of similars, which homeopathy is based on, he brought this. This is the whole purpose of medicine. You know, like he quit allopathic medicine for a while because he saw he was not helping people, because he was using things that wasn't actually like, was in many ways making them more sick, right? And one of the things that the reason I went ahead and read the entire footnote is that even though this was like 200 years ago, some people will say, you know, over 200 years ago at this point, they'll say, oh, well, but he just didn't have the scientific understanding or whatever. The reality is we're still in this place, guys, right? Like the things that we understand today contradict the things that we understood 20 years ago. And the things that we understand today, 20 years from now, we're going to say, oh, that was wrong. We missed part of it, or we missed something. There's always another layer that I don't know that we'll ever fully understand as it relates to like health and the human body and how we work and how all of the things work together. And while we're busy looking for those things, as Hahnemann said, that we're letting people continue to suffer because we're looking for answers to something that will always elude us, or that we think we have the answer only to be proven wrong by somebody in that comes along after us. Meanwhile, people could just be, we could be doing the work of helping people to heal, instead of looking for an explanation for why they're sick, right?
And actually, you read number one. So really, to set the stage for three, if I may, can I read number two?
Go for it.
Good thing we didn't start with 100. We'd be here all day.
Right.
But you'll see how it connects here. The highest ideal of cure is rapid, gentle, and permanent restoration of the health, or removal and annihilation of the disease in its whole extent in the shortest, most reliable, and most harmless way on easily comprehensible principles. And that's that last phrase is why I wanted to read this before we do number three, because this is saying we do this work using easily comprehensible principles. And aphorism three, which is one of the ones we wanted to focus on today, tells us what those principles are. So that's, I think that's a great segue.
Yeah, so we're setting the stage. The whole point of medicine is to help people heal, not to just understand why they're suffering. It does us no good if we understand why they're suffering if we don't have a solution for that suffering. And that anything that we need to do to help people to restore health, being focused on these really, you know, in my translation, my version here, Dr. Pace is reading a different version, clearly comprehensible principles. So if that's what, if we say different words, it's because we're just reading a different version of it. All right, Dr. Zarensky, anything you want to add before we dive into aphorism three?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's almost a relief that, you know, I don't have to come up with a reason or the sort of the speculation, or, you know, my job as the provider is to just listen to what's being told to me and gather as much information specific to sensation and function and how that sort of deviates from the healthy state. So it's not for me to sort of ponder why or come up with the reason. You know, it's good to have lab values and such to know potentially what's causing susceptibility, but it's almost a relief just to sort of stick to what's being told to me and how to sort of match that to the remedy and then follow up. Sort of it's more of a clear and simple path from my perspective.
Well, you know, you have the advantage that you came from a mom who was a homeopath, right? And that you homeopathy was part of your life for most of your life, or probably as far back as you can remember. I still sometimes struggle, and like I want to know, because I came from like the ultra science background. You know, my undergrad is in physiology and neurobiology, and like I want to know all of the things and exactly how everything works. And I finally had to get to the place with homeopathy that I just had to be grateful that my focus, I had to remember my focus was not on the was on the like the doing the work to help people get better, not necessarily on focusing on all of the things going on underneath. Jody, I'm curious, you had a couple of times where you were like nodding or like, what are the mom thoughts on this?
I have like the weirdest reaction when we start talking about this stuff. I don't know why it makes me like, I'm like everything. I'm like, heck yes. Yes. This is like really. And what you just read, Dr. Pace, is parents, what we're looking for restoration of health, and we're looking for the shortest, most reliable, most harmless route to get there. And I just love that this is not something that even I did not look into any of this type of reading for many, many years, just because I was like, I don't have to understand it. But to me, it's so now kind of further down the road, a little bit more understanding about homeopathy, not still a drop in the bucket, but it's just so cool to read these things because they're so basic. And yeah. I feel like it's so amazing that Hahnemann wrote this stuff, but it still applies today. The sick world is crying out for help. And how cool is it that we have providers in a form of medicine that can gently restore? And I just love reading about all of this. And
then it's so foundational and following laws and principles of nature that it can remain unchanged for over 200 years. You know, like if allopathic medicine was the same as it was 200 years ago, people would be getting bloodletting and mercury. for treatment. Purgatives, you know? So the fact that it has remained unchanged for 200 years and is still helping people heal, and even in cases where nothing else is working, just goes to show how sound the principles for the underlying homeopathy are. So shall we move on with some of those comprehensible sure. principles, the easily comprehensible principles?
Yeah, and if I could just add one thing, you know, not to dismiss science. Obviously, the Organon and Hahnemann, what we're doing is scientific with classical homeopathy, but there's been tremendous advances in the microscope and sort of knowing, for example, the neuroendocrine system and how that sort of responds to stress, starting with neurotransmitters that ultimately cascade into endocrine system, cortisol and such. So, you know, that's definitely a part, and we're able to sort of see into those systems. But again, with Hahnemann, that sort of all of these parts coming together, making up the entire organism, I think that's where we shine, is that we're not sort of focused on the individual sort of breaking down into the sort of the
one chemical or another, one body part or another.
Exactly. And that can be important. There can be supplements or medications that help with that. But again, it's that total symptom picture that we're focused on. And that's sort of, I just want to make that distinction that you know, science. Well,
Samuel Hahnemann was nothing if not a scientist. You know, homeopathy, when you actually understand how it is studied, how it was developed, how it's applied, it is one of the most scientific forms of medicine, in that there is, like, you know, the scientific method is rigorous behind everything with homeopathy, right? The place where we struggle is the full understanding of exactly how it works and the mechanism of action, right? But other than that, everything related to homeopathy, and even that is scientific, it's just probably we don't have the science, like, and the technology to understand it yet. But the thing that's always remarkable to me, and we talk about this as our team studies these texts regularly, is all of the things that Samuel Hahnemann talked about, and he didn't have the language to talk about it precisely, but he talked about it with pretty intense precision for something that he didn't yet understand and he couldn't prove, but he understood deeply about how things worked, including talking about things that are related to basically to germ theory before we even understood there were germs. Like before the first time that, was it Louis Pasteur?
Cholera. I was just having that same thought. He described tiny little animalcules that he felt were the what happened and why cholera spread. Yeah. And so he was the progenitor of germ theory, because no one wrote about, at least in non-Eastern languages, no one wrote about that before Hahnemann.
Yeah. Right. So he's well ahead of his time. He just, one of the challenges that people have is that when they will read this sometimes, especially like ultra skeptics, and I used to be one of those people, I'm like, oh my gosh, he's talking about all these things that make it sound like magical thinking, and you have to put yourself back to like what information was actually available, and to realize that he wasn't actually using magical thinking, and like it feels like old timey, whatever, like, you know, we think, oh, if he's using this type of words, and then it's not legitimate anymore. But when you actually look at the details, he was so far ahead of his time with his understanding of science, health, the body, like the world around him.
I mean, when you say scientist, people may not know he was a botanist. Mm-hmm. He knew his plants. He was a chemist. I mean, up to his point in time, they were using mercury for people with syphilis, but it was in a crude form. So they were basically killing them as they were trying to cure them. And he developed that very specific, the mercury we use today is the form he developed that he solubilized so that it didn't have the toxic effects. And then he used it in smaller doses. So even to that degree, he was the ultimate scientist in terms of experiment.
Well, let's go on with aphorism 3, shall we? Yeah. So I'll go ahead and read it from my version of the text. So aphorism 3 is, if the physician clearly perceives what has to be cured in disease, that is, in each individual case of the disease, knowledge of the disease, if he clearly perceives what is in medicines which heals, that is, in each individual medicine, knowledge of medicinal powers, if he applies in accordance with well-defined principles what is curative in medicines to what he has clearly recognized to be pathological in the patient, so that cure follows, that is, if he knows in each particular case how to apply the remedy most appropriate by its character, selection of the remedy, prepare it exactly as required and give it in the right amount, the correct dose, and repeat the dose exactly when required, And lastly, if in each case he knows the obstacles to cure and how to remove them so that recovery is permanent, then he knows how to treat thoroughly and efficaciously and is a true physician. So for those of you who got a little bit lost in his, because that was all one sentence, Samuel Hahnemann likes to write in long run-on sentences. He's saying, if you know and understand the disease, you know and understand the medicines, you know how to choose the right medicine for this, the particular disease as it's presenting in the person and give the correct dose, then you know how to treat and you know how to remove any obstacles to health, which we always talk about on this podcast. Then he knows how to treat and help somebody heal and is in that case a true physician.
Yes, again. As you're reading this, I'm like writing down what you're writing. I'm like, wait, knowledge of the disease, knowledge of the medicine, remedy selection, knowledge of remedy management, and obstacles to remove. That's literally what healed my kid.
Yeah. I mean, it's simple, right? Like, yes. There you go. That's what you got to do. And then this whole rest of this book is talking about how to do this with like a lot of details, because I mean, that's oversimplification of what you need to do, but that's what it takes ultimately to know these things really well, to be able to be a true physician, to help people heal. Go ahead, Dr. Pace, you're dying to say something.
Well, just as naturopathic doctors, I chose ND school coming out of a background of a lot of, the other traditional approaches like herbal medicine and physical medicine, et cetera. But, and, you know, as NDs, at least the vitalist branch of naturopathic practice, we come from this idea that we want to treat the individual case of disease, right? Mm-hmm. That's what we're focused on. And we want to, know what we're using, what it does to the body. We want to be able to, in some cases, prepare it, but more, at least know where it comes from and how it's made, right? Mm-hmm. And then the big one for a lot of NDs, of course, is removing the obstacles, right? And gets into mm-hmm. diet and lifestyle. And I remember Dr. Amy Rothenberg, who's a wonderful naturopathic doctor. I remember hearing this 30 years ago from her that, Hahnemann was the first naturopath because he talks about diet. He talks about lifestyle. He talks mm-hmm. about rightful living. He talks about rightful thinking and education. And that's mm-hmm. all things that is, were part of our naturopathic training. Just mm-hmm. great.
Yeah. He talks about environmental health. He talks about the importance of sleep, the importance of sun, the importance of moving your body. The importance of, as you said, of the way you're thinking and like the thoughts that you're choosing to engage with, that kind of thing. Yeah, absolutely.
And just to add on to what we're discussing, aphorism 3, knowing disease, but yeah, I think it's also important to define disease. And, I know we're sticking to 3 and 9, but in aphorism 13 in the Organon, he defines disease according to the allopathists. Obviously we're doing homeopathy and that's based on the law of similars, like cures like, but allopathy is sort of medicines that is contrary to what presents. Mm-hmm. And in aphorism 13, he discusses how disease considered by the allopathist as a thing separate from the living whole. So again, it's that focus on the microbe or the pathogen, the virus, the bacteria, which is definitely important. And especially now that we have testing and microscopes and we can see what was once hidden, but that's not the disease itself. The disease, according to Hahnemann, and this is from aphorism 11, only makes itself known by the manifestation or sort of that deviation away from health that shows up in the sensation and function, so that are compromised. So, obviously we're going to talk about health in aphorism 9 and what that means, but ease would sort of signify health. Disease is when we're moving away or we're deviating from health. And how does that show up in a sign or a symptom that needs to be part of that total symptom picture or sort of matched with the remedy. But the disease is not strep. The strep or, whether it's strep or other, you name it, that's part of the picture and that can cause symptoms. But again, if 10, clients have a certain exposure or lab tests that show that they've been infected, each of those 10 people may have a totally different response. Some of them may not even be showing symptoms. And so again, that's where homeopathy is so unique in that it's individual to the client. And then, that distinction of how we define disease that Hahnemann alludes to. I think that's very relevant, especially now that we have even more ways to diagnose and sort of isolate or sort of put into different categories what disease means.
Right. And this is relevant with the PANS and PANDAS community because we're always worried about strep carriers, right? So like it's not the strep because there's plenty of people who are perfectly fine and are unaffected by strep, but they carry it. So like they could test positive and not ever actually have strep. And so it's not just the cause or the trigger, right? It's the trigger plus the human that it's acting in that creates the disease.
And I love the metaphor that he utilizes, which is, you know, mistunement, right? It's like we're this vital instrument and then we get our mistuned and susceptibility is, I think, what you were referencing with, you know, not everyone that has tested for strep is going to actually have strep symptoms, but it's our mistuned response, right? How we are made out of balance. You know, everybody, 100 people are exposed to the same thing, but we don't all have the same response, and that variation, that mistunement, if you're sick, that's what we work on, is, you know, that individual case versus just the fact of they have strep or they don't have strep.
Yeah.
Yet another thing I love about homeopathy, because as parents, we spend so much time chasing, figuring out what the mistunement is. And it's literally, I think I could still be chasing what the mistunement is in Avery and still not know exactly what it is, like whatever systems are affected, whatever chemicals weren't happening right, or whatever it was. I love this for the PANS community that we don't, it's just the homeopathy looks at it as a whole and not all of these little pieces and all of these little parts that we have to figure out and define and all of that. It just simplifies things.
Yeah. And the reality for PANS families, like, you know, we always say PANS and PANDAS because some people are still finding things about PANDAS. But I mean, I have never met a kid who has just strep as a trigger. It might start that way, but it doesn't stay that way. And so it's again, it's not the strep is not the problem. It's the susceptibility, right? And it's not the mold. It's the susceptibility. It's not the Lyme. It's the susceptibility. It's not the chemicals that are being used. It's the susceptibility. And when we are just looking for each trigger or each thing that you think is the causing the mistunement, you're not actually addressing how it's mistuned. You are just looking for all of the ways that could be contributing to it, but you're just going to keep chasing it because it will spread. It always spreads. Something else adds to the picture.
Yeah. And we don't live in a mold-free world or a strep-free world, et cetera, et cetera. I say to folks, you know, there's no such thing as a sterile environment. You may think that, you know, this was a lot during COVID, right? Everybody was trying to be so, you know, so absolutely perfect about exposure, et cetera. And you can't do that. You do the best that you can, which is really what I try and help folks see, is that, you know, you do the best that you can, but it doesn't mean that you're 100% able to prevent that exposure. So you have to go back to not just that part of it, but as Jody was just saying, putting those pieces into the whole and then addressing the totality is what we do with homeopathy.
Well, and we find out too, the times that we have tried to get to like more sterile place, that we find that it causes its own problems too. Yeah. Like, let's talk about the overuse of antibiotics and like thinking that we need to be sterile inside, and look at the havoc that has reaped on our bodies by just assuming that all bacteria are bad and we should just kill them all. And I think that we're seeing the ramifications of that with like thinking all fungus or yeast or mold is bad, and like what we're doing to our bodies as a result, or all parasites are bad. Anyway, we always need to focus on the totality. We need to focus on the triggers, meeting the human and working on the susceptibility as it relates to how disease is showing up in that person, right? Shall we move on to the good stuff of aphorism 9, or is there anything else you guys want to talk about with aphorism 3? All right, I'll move on. So aphorism 9, and Jody, you're going to love this because For last season, we interviewed Dr. Stephen Messer for our 100th episode. And there, we're going to read one of the things that he quoted that I was like, I joined him and I said along with him. I don't know if it made it to the recording, but here we go. This is where it came from. So one of Stephen Messer's favorite aphorisms that he referenced in our 100th episode. So aphorism 9. In the state of health, the spirit-like vital force, dynamis, animating the material human organism, reigns in supreme sovereignty. It maintains the sensations and activities of all the parts of the living organism in a harmony that obliges wonderment. The reasoning spirit who inhabits the organism can thus freely use this healthy living instrument to reach the lofty goal of human existence. Not gonna lie, guys. This aphorism, I love it now and I see how true it is and I understand it. When I first got to homeopathy, I was like,
yeah,
nope. Spirit-like vital force. What are you talking about? No. So let's chat.
That's literally what I was thinking as you were reading it. And then I read this morning and then I text you a weird GIF or something where I was like, I have no idea what I'm reading. I understand this so much now and it's 100% true. Before homeopathy, I would have had the same reaction. Like, this is ridiculous. Like, this is woo woo as it gets right here. But this is what happened. This is what we experienced. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Very cool.
And for me, coming from the other end of that, I mean, maybe I'm a product of the 60s, perhaps, but this just was a resonance when I read this. When I really started reading the Organon, it was a confirmation, an affirmation of my perception of health, and even before I was into homeopathy that much. Because I first read this back in like 1978, and I'm not saying I knew what it meant, but there was a resonance that, you know, spirit, like, you know, I interpreted as energy, right? Because that's really, he's not saying spirit like a ghost. He's not saying spirit like Holy Spirit. He's saying spirit like, which is his way of just saying non-material or energy.
But for some people, it might be Holy Spirit. Like, I mean, yeah, we can't say sure. For sure, you know, because Hahnemann did, he was a religious man too.
Yes, so
like
very much right.
So the maybe point is where I came to is there are things about our bodies that science has not explained and might never explain. There are things about the world, about the universe that I do not have an answer for. Science does not have an answer for. And this basically is where that's coming from, is we have to use some word to describe it. And depending on where people's proclivities, their upbringing, whatever, their cultural experience, wherever that lies, it's how we talk about the same thing, right? This phenomenon where something about us turns us from, instead of all of these molecules that are made up from literally stars, like we are made from stardust. And somehow, instead of being stars or plants or a mouse or whatever, like that we are humans, that we have a body that works together with all of these little cells that, like, yes, we see how they grow. We see how we go from, you know, two separate, you know, the gametes to being a full human being. But still, there's something magic that happens that we don't really fully understand. And this is basically saying, here's the magic. And we're going to call it the spirit, like vital force. And even though we don't know exactly what it is, without this, we don't do well. But when we have this and it's working well, look at what we can do. Look at what amazing things our body is able to do. The lofty goal of human existence.
Are you quoting Joni Mitchell there?
Oh, was I?
Dr. Barr. Yeah, stardust. We are stardust. You bet.
No, I'm actually, so my daughter, when she was a baby, we bought her a bunch of like physics for babies books. And my favorite book that I will probably keep until we die is the Astrophysics for Babies, because it talks about how it like talks literally about how all the elements that come to us are from stars, and that dead stars live on in us.
Yeah. I believe that's from her song. She wrote Woodstock. So I think that's where she talks about being stardust.
See, look, there you go. You from the 60s and me with the science, and we still came to the same place, right? We're all stars. We're all made from stars.
Well, the word spirit, you know, I think of like inspiration or respiration. So, you know, even our breath, unless we're out in the cold, you know, and it's sort of fogging up, you can't see our breath. And it's almost similar to the way that a remedy works in that it's dynamic. I mean, you can't look into the microscope and see any physical constituent of the plant, the mineral, the animal that makes up the remedy. But again, you know, another word from that definition is dynamic, which is, you know, literally means a force that stimulates change or progress within a system or process. So again, if you take arsenicum in its crude form, that's potentially toxic. But when you dilute it and succuss it and you sort of potentize it, that now becomes a remedy that can, in, again, you can't see how it works or sort of nail down the mechanism of action, but it has an effect on, you know, the dynamic part of the human body, and that sort of affects sensations and activities, and sort of bridges that gap from that deviation from the healthy state, you know, the disease, and sort of reduces susceptibility and sort of allows for that harmony to sort of once again happen in the body. But I think, go ahead, Greg.
No, Ben, please.
Oh, but yeah, I mean, I think, again, we mentioned harmony before, the healthy living instrument, you know, so, and a lot of this with health and well-being, we have a will. So a lot of what we can do is voluntary, but then there's also the involuntary autonomic nervous system or, you know, digestion. We're not sort of consciously making that happen, but anything that we can sort of do in addition to the remedy, whether it be with movement or hygiene or the way that we're eating. And obviously some of the kids that we work with, we can't really touch on that because we just want to sort of, whatever they can sort of subsist on.
Yeah, whatever they can actually do.
But, you know, with other clients, there's, you know, and as you alluded to, Hahnemann was sort of the original naturopathic physician in that he did put emphasis on that in addition to the what the remedy can do, you know, as far as healing and such.
What I was going to add is that the dynamis comes from the Greek root is, well, at least in English, is dunamai, which is means power, potential, or ability to, you know, to do something. So that really, it all fits, you know, everything that we're saying here in terms of what's going on when we're, you know, trying to reach this healthy condition.
Well, I feel like the thing that really connects for me is that we took sort of a path where we had this understanding of the body being the like a whole system in and of itself together. And as we were trying to understand it, like from that first aphorism with people trying to understand what was happening in the body, we like dissected it and took it apart so we could understand it better. And then we started viewing our body as a system of like pumps and tubes, right? And like these pumps and tubes are sort of interconnected, but like we're not like a car engine, you know, we are so much more than that. Like, and a car engine could never be what a human is. And to me, yes, we have pumps. Yes, we have tubes. We've got lots of different things that look an awful lot. Like if you really break it down and oversimplify it, that looks like a car engine. We've got electrical systems. We've got spark plugs. We've got all of these different things. But the spirit-like, like the spirit-like vital force or dynamis is basically the thing that makes us different than a car engine and makes like, even if we have like similar, like stardust, that it goes into making up a car engine and it goes into making us up. There's this thing. And that is really at the core of what as the part that Dr. Messer said was the, maintains the sensations and activities of all the parts of the living organism in a harmony that obliges wonderment. And that's really, I love that. Both the obliges wonderment, the harmony that it's maintaining, and helping us reach the lofty goal of human existence. Jody, what are your thoughts on hearing all this?
I'm sitting here thinking, like, it makes a whole lot of sense to me. And I love that it's the whole. Dr. Pace, earlier you said something about this aligning with your perception of health. And I think it's really hard for us as PANS families because we come in
in this mainstream medical, or even, I think, I mean, maybe even humans right now, because we are taught this way of caring for our bodies and then caring for our children's bodies. I had a certain perception of health. And whenever I came to homeopathy, I didn't think a lot of it because we were backed into a corner, so we just had to go. But then the further we got in, I realized that my perception of health needed to shift a little bit. And I didn't realize I was shifting into this stuff, but it's a really, really slow shift. And I think that I think it's okay for, as families, us to explore the fact that our perception is one way, and there are other options, other ways to go about it. There's, I think we have to unlearn some stuff in order to like be even willing to take the stuff that we're talking about today in, and really kind of open our minds up and be willing to imagine that we don't do all of the ologists, because it's all just taking the body apart and treating systems and everything. There's actually something that can come in and gently care for the whole and heal the whole.
Now, the thing that's so funny to me is that this aphorism basically describes why I went into naturopathic medicine instead of allopathic medicine, which was my original plan, that I wanted to help people actually heal, and I wanted to help them live their best lives. And, you know, in spite of whatever was handed to them as far as like a diagnosis or a challenge that they've got with their health. And yet it took me a long time to accept homeopathy as a possible solution because of that skepticism that I have. And then once I finally saw the difference between what you could see happen with herbs and diet, which can definitely be helpful. And they can't get you to the same place that you can get with homeopathy, to this place of reaching the lofty goal of human existence, and being able to do it like on your own and not because you've taken a nootropic or something that's like forcing your body and your brain into this like peak performance place. Like we'll see with some of like the biohacking that people are really trying to do. You stop taking any of those things. Like that's not lofty human existence, having to take a whole bunch of things to be able to function at your peak. I want to function at my peak on my own, right? And I've talked to several of my colleagues who appreciated homeopathy to an extent, but never really followed through with it. And there's so many of them who are saying like, this isn't what I went to naturopathic school for. What I'm doing day in and day out is not achieving what I went to school for. And I'm like, yeah, because you're not doing homeopathy. And they're like, oh, yeah. Yep. Now what?
I want to add to the piece about lofty goal of human existence, because this is something that my mentor in all things Organon, Dr. Joe Kellerstein, who's a wonderful naturopathic homeopath, he brought to my attention. There's the magnum opus, another one that Hahnemann wrote, was his theory of chronic diseases. And went through several versions. And this is, just going to read one sentence. This is from his preface to the first edition, which he wrote in 1828, but it directly relates to this concept. If I did not know for what purpose I was put here on earth, to become better myself as far as possible, and to make better everything around me that is within my power to improve. That's what you were saying, Dr. Barr.
Well, you know, I said it a million times, and I will say it a million times again, that I really believe that PANS kids who heal, especially those who heal with homeopathy, that I'm seeing this with so many of them, that like they are going on and doing remarkable and profound things. And so like I have gone to the point that I've said that PANS kids are going to save the world, because they, of what they have gone through and the healing that they have with homeopathy is getting them to this where they are reaching and they're living the lofty goal of human existence. And in part because of what they've gone through, like they don't take what they have in front of them for granted. And so many of them are going on and saying like, I got through this and I am so much better, and I'm not going to waste this opportunity.
And even
and
just
the ones that just want to hang out too, that's also great. The lofty goal of just existing is also fantastic. So no pressure for any Pans kids who might be listening to this. You don't have to save the world. You can be okay just like hanging
save
out.
Save the world one person at a time. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the way you just define that, Dr. Barr, you said healing, not cure. I mean, so disease, I mean, you can cure a disease or you can eliminate sort of, so that it's not showing up on lab work or diagnostics, but the word healing literally means to restore to health or to make whole again. So, I think that's sort of the emphasis for homeopathy and what we're doing is that whole person. And it's not just the system, nervous system, immune system or specific organs or tissues or cells or organelle, such, but it's the family dynamic. It's, their relation to humanity and sort of the larger picture and that sort of holistic nature of us as human beings. And I think, that's where homeopathy heals and sort of can be more effective, safe, simple than sort of other modalities of medicine. There's a time and a place for all of this, but again, homeopathy is sort of that trump card, if you will, that or the sort of the ace in the hole that really can sort of touch on all of what we're talking about here.
Yeah. Jody, do you still feel like your brain is all scrambled with these, or do they make a little bit more sense?
It's so easy to understand when y'all talk about it. I was just thinking, I love that we cannot just do two, right? We have to talk about other ones because it all comes together. And then I was also like, the second y'all read it, it made perfectly good sense to me. And I love it. No, my brain is actually for once okay.
For what it's worth, the only reason I probably helped because I was able to put certain emphasis on things because I've read it like 10 times or more, right?
Yeah.
The first time I read it, my brain was so scrambled, and the second and third time. And even to this day, like Dr. Pace has been practicing for a lot longer than I have and has had a lot more experience with reading through the Organon again and again and again. And even when we as a team read through the Organon together, which we've done twice now, because even as like every time we read it, there's something more that we understand a little bit better. And like for what it's worth, like, I mean, it's tough with Hahnemann and his like paragraphs long sentences too,
Not just so. Sammy, that's the classical, aphorisms, right? That's the way they used to write. Right?
Yeah.
You had to think when you read something.
Yep.
Cool. Yep. I want to take us back to aphorism 3 for just a second. It's the one about knowledge of the disease, the medicine, the remedy selection, the management, and obstacles. I love the very end of the last sentence, and it's talking about the physician and his knowledge and whatnot. The very end of it says, "And he is a true practitioner of the healing art." And it makes me feel pretty overwhelmed. My place in all this is rather overwhelming because I get to see it on a large scale. I wish every PANS parent, I wish every human had a little looking glass into what I get to see. And what it is a whole lot of kids healing and getting better. And man, it's, I'm like, I read the end of that aphorism. I'm like, true practitioner of the healing art. Like, I get to sit with you guys while y'all do this thing. And it's so cool. Like, Hahnemann was explaining y'all, and it is an art. It's like, it's especially with PANS kids, it's really a difficult condition. I can't imagine how difficult it is to care for PANS children with homeopathy, but man, you guys do a really good job of it. So I feel pretty honored to be sitting with the folks that Hahnemann was describing in this aphorism.
Well, on that note, is there anything else that either of you want to make sure that we chat about as it relates to these two? Or do we let Jody just leave it there with the true practitioners of the healing art?
Sounds good.
I just have one last thing to say. I think the lofty goal of human existence, there is, just like disease, each one of these kids that we work with has a different presentation. It's an individual with a disease that has certain characteristics. And that lofty goal for each each human is unique to that person. So it's not like there's sort of the ultimate lofty goal for anyone, but it's sort of what each person strives for, how they can thrive and sort of in that existence. And I think that's, I just wanted to point that out.
Absolutely. I appreciate that. Cause yeah, we don't all have to save the world. I don't want to save the world. I want to do my part to make the world a little bit better for a small group of people, but my job is to save everybody.
You're doing a pretty big part, Dr. Barr.
I wouldn't be able to do it without you guys. So thank you for joining us for our first episode for our third season. So we can kick it off with like the whole point of homeopathy and why we show up and do all of the things that we do. And so everything that we talk about moving forward in this season is going to come back to this. So just keep this in mind when we are talking to families who are recovering. This is what they're doing. They're working on achieving that lofty goal of human existence. Anybody that we talk to about anything else that's going on, like other doctors who practice different types of medicine or different things to consider, we're looking for obstacles so that we can understand the condition, so we can know the right medicine. It's all coming together for these two things, right? So we can meet our highest calling to help sick people get healthy, to heal as it is termed, so that we can know the disease, know the medicines, remove the obstacles, know how to apply things appropriately, and help people actually heal. So we can be these practitioners of the healing arts, so that we can see the systems working in the ways that they do that obliges wonderment, so that we can achieve and live the lofty goal of human existence. So that's the whole reason for all of this, and everything we're talking about comes back to that.
Love it.
Sounds good to me.
Sounds great.
All right, guys. Well, we'll look forward to seeing y'all in future episodes. I'm sure we'll see. There'll be some reason for us to come back and have another conversation about other aspects of the Organon. But I'm so glad we started with this one. So until next time, everybody, take care.
We hope you found this episode helpful, hopeful, and inspiring. We would love to connect with you on social media and have you as part of our amazing community. You can find us on Facebook by searching for Homeopathy for Pans and Pandas.
If Facebook isn't your thing, you can also connect with us on Instagram and YouTube by searching for Resilience Naturopathic or clicking the links in our show notes. You can also visit our website, resiliencenaturopathic.com.
As always, we value your partnership in advocacy and education. Your support through following, sharing, rating, and reviewing our podcast is crucial in our mission to teach the world about PANS, PANDAS, and homeopathy. So if you found this podcast helpful, please leave us a review. Together, we are making a difference.
And finally, this podcast really is for you. Your questions and feedback help us make sure we are answering the right questions so you can feel confident making the next right step for your kids. Send us your questions or request guests by emailing us at podcast@resiliencenaturopathic.com, also linked in the show notes.